Roger Williams, jet along my mind and monitor.
February the 9, 1969. This week it was announced that the Nixon administration intends to endow Vice President Agnew with a formal agency. It's called the Office of Intergovernmental Relations. Nice. This week they gave him an agency. If it works out, they're going to give him a telephone and a typewriter and an office, all like that. Maybe pencils. Here's a new one by Stephen Eady, To Be in Love.
Treetops. To be in love is to dance with a dream. Somehow love seems to know how to change the status quo. Suddenly lukewarm oatmeal tastes like peach ice cream. To be in love is to cry from sheer excitement or start to laugh before joke is told.
As bashful as I am, I'll need a million years to let you know how nice it is to be in
Sometimes
love.
Sometimes it's awful hard for me to think of different ways to say it's wonderful to be
I'm
in
sure
love.
I'm sure it must be obvious to all concerned that I am more than satisfied
to be in love with you. To be in love. Sort of silly. To be in love is to giggle and grin. And you don't really care if you go in anywhere. And it matters even less where you've been. To be in love is to find you're attracted to the stars. Children's toys are sold. And I started thinking maybe I would like a small addition to the family.
Then I achieved your goal by letting nature take its course and doing what comes naturally.
And suddenly I'm passing out cigars and telling everyone how proud I am.
To be in love.
To be in love.
To be in love. To be in love.
With you.
It's marvelous. To be in love.
Next, On the Line with Bob Considine, brought to you by Mutual of Omaha, the company that pays.
You, Alexis Johnson, Undersecretary of State for Political Affairs, is quoted in a current magazine as saying that he believes the war in Vietnam will simply fade away. I heard that same theory outlined a couple of years ago in an interview in Saigon with the then Premier Nguyen Cao Ky. I'll be back to try to explain it, and it's not going to be easy. First, here's a reminder from Mutual of Omaha.
Seems you pay more each time you go shopping. Seems you pay more when you're at the store. And though high prices may never be stopping, there is a way to help your money buy more.
You don't have to be told things cost more today. You know it every time you pay a bill, even when you go window shopping. And medical costs, hospital and doctor care are no exception. To make sure you're not one of the 9 out of 10 people who haven't enough health insurance, call the Mutual of Omaha man in your own community. His company pays 30% more of its premium income and benefits than the combined average of the next 24 companies. That's one reason why Mutual of Omaha is known as the company that pays, and a good reason for you to be protected by such a company. Remember, in all the world, there is only one Mutual of Omaha.
The thesis that the war in Vietnam will simply peter out one of these days, weeks, months, or years is pretty well entrenched in Vietnam. It's based on many things. Among them is the fact that the people of the North and those of the South have much in common. Language, religion, and customs that date back several thousand years. They have a mutual dread of China, which ruled them for nearly 1,000 years. Ho Chi Minh will accept Chinese arms and food supplies, sure, but he wants no Chinese troops or volunteers inside his hard-pressed country. He's afraid they'd stay for, let's say, another 1,000 years. Both the peoples of the North and the South share a suspicion of foreigners in general, particularly the motives of the foreigners. Both sides still hate the French. The Northern Vietnamese, I've been told, give their Russian instructors and advisors severe cases of the shakes. For instance, they shot literally hundreds of those big SAM ground-to-air missiles at our planes and averaged only one hit in 70 tries. The Russians held their heads. A SAM costs a lot of money. It is one of the most sophisticated weapons systems the Russians possess, and they're very proud of it. And here were these crazy people of the North shooting them off like firecrackers, one Russian technician was quoted as saying indignantly. We've had somewhat similar troubles with our allies, the South Vietnamese. Ky himself once put in a nice big fat plug for Adolf Hitler. During that interview I had with Ky, I asked him how he would know the war was petering out. Would there be a signal from Hanoi? No, he said with a shrug. One day, there wouldn't be as much shooting as expected. The next day, there would be even less. So the South Vietnamese would not shoot back as much as they intended. There would be other manifestations. The traffic on the Ho Chi Minh trails would ease off, for example. Finally, we'll tell you what's happening, Ky said with his tired smile. We'll hope that you'll be able to understand that wars can, indeed, just fade away. They'll go back where they started from, above the 17th parallel, and the Viet Cong will go back to work inside South Vietnam when they realize our government is strong and about as democratic and as honest as we can be. It is hard for us, the Americans, who were brought up on the philosophy of fighting to a finish and then unconditional surrender, but our man, you, Alexis Johnson, who is the senior career diplomat in the State Department, has come around to Key's theory. Who knows, maybe that euphoria will settle over the peace talks in Paris, too. This is Bob Considine for Monitor, and now here's something new from Mutual of Omaha.
Seems you pay more each time you go shopping. Seems you pay more when you're at the store.
The cost of living keeps going up, and the cost of going to the hospital is rising even faster. But there is an answer. A new hospital surgical protection plan from Mutual of Omaha. It pays more in benefits. That's why it'll pay you to call your nearby man from Mutual of Omaha. The company that pays.
On the Line with Bob Considine will be heard again later today, presented by Mutual of Omaha and its life insurance affiliate, United of Omaha. You're on the Monitor Beacon. Here's Margaret Whiting on monitor singing Where Was I?
There were lovers in meadows when I was a young, young girl. Loving, delighting, as only young lovers can. Clinging to kisses that carry them to the sky.
Today, there'll be another program in the second Sunday series called The Moon, Is This Trip Necessary? Peter Hackus in Washington and other NBC News reporters across the country will present the arguments for and against moonshots. Is there too much emphasis on the moon and not enough on man is one of the questions. And it's a tough one, especially when it comes right down to tax dollars. Listen to The Moon, Is This Trip Necessary? NBC Radio, 9:05 Eastern Time.
Copeland Singers, somewhat off mic, Classical Gas, and Scarborough Fair. Here's Joe Garagiola for Monitor Sports.
A great deal of the success currently enjoyed by football is due to the fact that the game lends itself so well to films. The teams use them for scouting, but I'm thinking more of the films that the public sees. Baseball is a more difficult game to film for several reasons, not the least of which is financial. To film a week of the pro football schedule involves 13 camera crews working one day a week. To film a week of Major League Baseball would take 12 camera crews working every day. Despite these handicaps and others, there's a new film out called Baseball 68, which is a collection of highlights of the past season. And it's really something that every baseball fan should see. Did you ever see a triple play? A lot of fans haven't. In this film, you'll see four. Certainly, there's a luck factor involved in recording four triple plays in one year. But unfortunately, it works two ways. There was one triple play that no camera crew got, and that happened to be the one that Ron Hansen made unassisted. As can be expected, you see a lot of outstanding pitching, including Denny McLain winning his 31st game. Not only that, but the musical background includes organ music played by a 31-game winner. But there's more than just pitching here. You see the raw power that's unleashed when Big Frank Howard swings the bat. It illustrates perfectly what baseball people mean when they say, the minute the bat hit the ball, you knew it was gone. But to me, the most interesting part of the film is the one that shows the great defensive plays. In their attempts to catch flying baseballs, players will do things that would make one of Ed Sullivan's acrobats jealous. This film captures a lot of that. If there's a sports night on your club schedule, let me suggest that you contact your nearest Major League club for a print of Baseball 68. It's a movie you can bring the kids to. And there sure aren't too many of them around these days. This is Joe Garagiola from Monitor Sports. And now this from State Farm.
Hi, this is Don Adams. Last night, I got a low-cost homeowner's policy from State Farm Fire and Casualty, the world's biggest homeowner's insurer. It covers my home and belongings in case of fire, theft, and storm. Would you believe I saved enough money on it to buy a big yacht? Would you believe a small dinghy?
For your home, your car, your life, and your health. State Farm is all you need to know about insurance.
With Secondhand Rose. In Southern Nevada, your station is KORK Las Vegas. All the NBC stations have a word for you now, then we'll be back. Morgan for Monitor.
there are warning signs to detect alcoholism, attempting to solve problems with a drink, blackouts, drinking more than you really mean to, needing a drink the morning after? These are some of the warning signs of the disease alcoholism. For help and information, call 777-5752. The number again, 777-5752.
This is Charlie Brown. All I said was, I think playing records, making information weekdays from 3 to 7 p.m. is just fantastic. And boy, did I get told where to go.
This is the place, WNBC Radio 660, where Charlie Brown's good sounds make going home a good time. The Charlie Brown Show, weekdays, 3 to 7 p.m.
Spend the night with Long John Neville and his friends. You'll find a new day has dawned. Midnight to 5 a.m. on WNBC Radio 660, New York. What NBC News is to the nation...
This is Jim Iyer, WNBC News. It's 3:30, 31 degrees in New York and still snowing. The Police Department Safety Division has issued an appeal to the public asking motorists not to use their automobiles under any circumstances unless it is an emergency. This, of course, because of hazardous driving conditions on the city's roads and bridges. The appeal was issued after reports from various locations that it's necessary to close off some highways because of stalled cars, which have jammed traffic for miles. The condition, which tied up automobiles exiting from Kennedy Airport to the Van Wyck Expressway, was cleared up by police tow trucks after the traffic had backed up for miles. Cars were stalled for about 2 hours. Among other locations on highways that were tied up, the Belt Parkway in both directions from Knapp Street in Sheepshead Bay to Pennsylvania Avenue in Canarsie. The FDR Drive is closed from 66th Street to South Ferry. Today's big snowstorm has prompted New York City officials to declare a snow emergency, which will go into effect at 6 p.m. The snow emergency prohibits parking on all streets marked with red signs, designating them as snow emergency streets. Change of snow tires will be required for driving on the emergency streets. Many streets at this hour in and around Manhattan are impassable due to drifts, stalled vehicles, or vehicles stuck or sliding on the snow-clogged streets. Because of stalled automobiles, traffic is backed up for miles on the Van Wyck Expressway leading out of Kennedy Airport. Police sent all available tow trucks to the area to get traffic moving again. Meanwhile, the City Health Department warns all persons with lung and heart ailments not to shovel snow. 15 persons aboard an interstate bus were injured today when the vehicle went out of control. It struck a retaining wall on the Major Deacon Expressway near 230th Street in the Bronx. The injured persons, including the driver, were taken by ambulance and police radio cars to three Bronx hospitals. The Long Island Railroad says its trains have experienced only minor delays during the storm so far, but the rough highway situation on Long Island and cancellations or delays would result. The inability of crews to get to terminals could mean as many as 20 trains being canceled. But this spokesman who informed us of this said this is only an estimate. The longest train delay this morning, the spokesman said, involved a Babylon train. A state of traffic emergency has been declared in Jersey City. Newark, New Jersey's police director, Dominic Spina, today declared a state of snow emergency and said parking would be prohibited on all streets so marked. The Municipal Communications Service reported all subways, ferries, and trains on or near schedule. It said driving was extremely hazardous and again urged motorists not to drive. Police headquarters has reports that southbound traffic to Kennedy Airport on the Van Wyck Expressway in Queens was halted because of stalled automobiles. There have been intermittent delays on the Van Wyck throughout the day. Consolidated Edison Company reports many power failures, particularly in southern Westchester County. A spokesman for the utility said emergency crews had been called in and would continue to work until all power is restored. A few closings due to the storm. East Orange Catholic High School of East Orange, New Jersey, closed tomorrow. All public and parochial schools and all junior and senior high schools in Belmore No. 7, North Belmore No. 4, Merrick No. 25, North Merrick No. 29, and Central High No. 3 will be closed tomorrow. Central School District No. 2, Cold Spring Harbor, Long Island, and Suffolk will also be closed tomorrow. Wontaw Public Schools and St. Francis Parochial School closed. St. Anthony's School in Union City, New Jersey closed tomorrow. Caldwell College in Caldwell, New Jersey closed. And all public schools in Newark, New Jersey will be closed tomorrow. The forecast, a heavy snow warning remains in effect, snow accumulating up to 6 to 8 inches by late afternoon before tapering off to snow flurries towards evening and gradually ending early tonight. Quite windy and cold tonight. Tomorrow, variable cloudiness, windy and cold. It's now 31 degrees in New York and snowing. This is Jim Iyer, WNBC News. Now back to NBC's Monitor.
Henry Morgan, Mid-Afternoon Purple. Isn't color radio wonderful? Our new series, Capitol Hill Monitor, profiles the men who run our government. One of the new fellows is the subject today. Here's reporter Paul Duke, NBC News, Washington.
Congressman Morris Udall of Arizona did something recently no one has done this century. He challenged the House Speaker for his job, in this case, Speaker John McCormick. Udall did not win, but he established himself as a comer in congressional politics. With his brother, former Interior Secretary Stuart Udall, he comes from a political-minded family.
I grew up in a small town in northern Arizona. My father was the judge there. He was interested in politics. My grandfather had been in the territorial legislature of Arizona, incidentally, with Senator Goldwater's grandfather. I had uncles who were running for office. I kind of grew up in this kind of an atmosphere, and we were taught at home that this is a high calling, that politicians aren't crooks and thieves, that this is not an occupation you look down upon.
So politics has come naturally to Morris Udall, and it started at an early age.
I'm student body president in high school, and then my first big political success was being elected student body president at the University of Arizona. I was the first non-fraternity man to ever hold that office. I ran as an independent or a non-Greek, and from there I became a county prosecutor and then on to Congress.
Udall has been a busy congressman pushing a wide variety of legislation. Occasionally, he gets letters from crank constituents who don't like his many activities.
One of my favorites, I think, is an old, crusty character from Arizona who began his letter by saying, "Of all the rats and snakes who were ever elected to go to Congress and misrepresent the people's wishes, you rank head and shoulders beneath the lowest."
Udall is a youthful 46, and he keeps in trim by playing golf and exercising.
I do push-ups. I do running in place. I do a lot of the stretching exercises that you'll find in the Royal Canadian Air Force manual or some of these other things. And you can do this in a motel room while you're traveling. You can do it almost any place. And I try to make it part of my ritual in the morning to do this.
A special hobby is flying. His Arizona district stretches 400 miles from California to New Mexico, and he hops about in a private plane.
There's something about being up there in the air, about the navigation, the mechanical problems, seeing the country from on high, and a feeling that you're off away from the cares of the world that I find really refreshing as I find nothing else.
Udall's main interest in Congress is revitalizing the Democratic Party, but he thinks it may take a political disaster to do it.
The older Democrats are so thoroughly entrenched here, and the system is such that it's easy to perpetuate their power, that it may take a kind of a reverse 1964 or a reverse 1932 in which the Republicans make great and substantial gains before any changes occur around here. However, there is still considerable steam in the desire of the middle service, middle seniority members and younger members to present a little more modern and more vigorous face for our party to the nation.
Congressman Morris Udall, the latest of the Arizona Udalls to reach political prominence. Paul Duke, NBC News, Washington.
A freshman congressman of the 91st Congress. I always thought it must be kind of a shock for a man to go from being a VIP in his own state to being just a freshman in Congress. Well, at least they don't have to wear freshman beanies and get hazed.
What's my name? Who am I? And where in the world am I going? What's my aim? Must I die?
He loves me.
He's sending you a Valentine candy and flowers arrangement through his nearby FTD florist.
He loves me.
At 15 before the hour, love, you're on the monitor beacon. This is Jack Hayes.
do you know what to do in case of a heart attack? The most important step is to call a doctor immediately. Then, help the patient into a comfortable position. This is usually halfway between lying and sitting. Make no attempt to lift the patient, and be sure to loosen all tight clothing. See that the patient isn't chilled, but, on the other hand, don't let him sweat, and don't give him anything to drink. If you follow these simple steps, you may be able to prevent a life from becoming a statistic. For a booklet on heart attacks, write the New York Heart Association, 2 East 64th Street, or call 838-8800, extension 826.
Tomorrow, shop the pre-Lincoln's birthday sales at Macy's. Furniture sales, houseware sales, TV sales, fashion fabric sales, and more. Pre-Lincoln's birthday sales at Macy's start tomorrow.
WNBC, Radio 660, New York.
City commuting problems are just like any other commuting problems, only more so. From Chicago, Bill Lindsay, NBC News reports.
Chicago keeps trying to do something to help those who commute to work in the city, but the problems keep getting worse. Five major expressways and many widened boulevards lead into the city. But every weekday rush hour, morning and evening, they're jammed with vehicles, bumper to bumper. 1 million people use the expressways every day, and too many of them are driving one to a car, too many trying to get to work or go home at the same time. Traffic authorities are puzzled at the commuters who will philosophically accept common delays of 30 to 45 minutes for the luxury of driving a car when there is good public transportation available. The city's transit authority trains and buses carry 750,000 people a day, but is eager and able to handle many more. Two new rapid transit routes are under construction. It's expected they will carry almost 90,000 people a day, but only an estimated 13,000 of these will come from the ranks of those who now drive. The Transit Authority knows that comfort and speed are required to lure new riders, but new equipment costs money, and the authority already is operating in the red. But the planners still hope soon to add new air-conditioned trains that will travel 65 miles an hour. Some of Chicago's commuters come daily from points as far away as South Bend, Indiana, and Milwaukee, Wisconsin. The half-dozen railroads that now bring commuters here also are capable of handling far greater numbers, and they have convenient stops at nearby suburbs. Traffic planners say the facilities exist to get people to work in Chicago and home again without the frustration, frayed nerves, horn honking, deadened fenders, and long periods spent sitting on the expressways with the motor idling. It's principally a psychological problem of convincing commuters to use them. This is Bill Lindsay for Monitor.
I guess sometimes a man's car is his castle. And if he's going to be stuck, he'd rather be stuck in the comfort of solitude than stuck with a trainload of other commuters. Other problems, other places, later in our commuter survey.
Grass doesn't grow as high as the tree. The river doesn't flow as deep as the sea. The mountain doesn't reach as tall as the sky. And she doesn't love you as much as I. The leaf doesn't cling as strong as the vine. Doesn't last as long as time. The wind doesn't blow as warm as a sigh.
Doesn't grow as high as the tree.
Motor Trend magazine has just named the 1969 Plymouth Roadrunner as Car of the Year. Listen to just a few of the reasons. Power from a standard 383 cubic inch, 335 horsepower wedge V8 engine. Smooth, fast shifts with a standard floor-mounted Hurst four-speed gearbox. Fantastic handling from Red Streak wide tread tires and a heavy-duty suspension, both standard. And, of course, a
meep, meep
horn, just to let people know what's past. These are a few of the features that are standard on the great Roadrunner, and a few of the reasons Motor Trend chose the bird as its car of the year. There's only one place to catch the car of the year, at your Plymouth dealer.
The drug scene in America, a series of reports on Monitor. Here's John Burns, noted authority on drug abuse.
The increased use of illegal and dangerous drugs by high school and college students has alarmed parents, educators, and law enforcement officials throughout the country. While the heaviest concentration of student drug users can usually be found in and around the large urban areas, there's growing evidence that students are experimenting with drugs on campuses of all sizes and geographic description. With this in mind, the New York State Narcotics Control Commission has recently developed a hard-hitting education program. It features a film shown in high schools and colleges across the state designed to help non-drug users understand the problems and dangers of drug abuse. Ex-drug addicts play all the parts in the film, and it's straight from the shoulder in a language young people can relate to. These former addicts state very bluntly to their audiences, "We want to prepare you for one of the biggest decisions of your life, whether or not to start using drugs. Believe us," they say, "when we tell you that your first introduction to drugs will probably not come from some sinister character lurking by the schoolyard or campus. It will undoubtedly come from a drug-using friend anxious to turn you on for fun or profit." The ex-addicts further point out that this friend will probably approach the non-user at a time when he is unhappy over grades, a broken romance, or some other personal problem. The offer may come very innocently as he crosses the campus or leaves a classroom. These friends will make it all sound so innocent and easy. With your guard down, you may give in. And once you start, you may be able to take it or leave it. But again, you may not, thus leading you step by step into the terrible world of the drug addict. A world where you soon start looking for bigger kicks, with plenty of people around to help you find them. The former addicts point out that once in this drug culture, your grades go down, your health begins to deteriorate, you lose a sense of values, and sooner or later you will probably end up with a criminal record that will cast a shadow on your entire life. No one film or education program will end the growing student drug problem, but from what can be judged so far, this effort in New York State appears to be making a deep and lasting impression upon many young people searching for the truth about drugs. This is John Burns for Monitor.
We interrupt momentarily to bring you this late bulletin from our WNBC newsroom. the Lincoln Tunnel has been closed to all westbound traffic. No traffic from Manhattan to New Jersey will be allowed through the tunnel until further notice. The closing was necessitated by stalled and stuck traffic on the New Jersey Turnpike and Route 3. Once again, the Lincoln Tunnel has been closed to all westbound traffic, that is, traffic from Manhattan to New Jersey. This has been a bulletin from the WNBC newsroom.
In the news, a topless wedding in San Antonio, Texas. The young couple, a go-go dancer and a bartender, were married in a tavern called Waterhole No. 3. The bride was topless, the groom wore full-dress western with cowboy boots, and the groom said, "We work here, met here, fell in love here, and decided to get married here in the uniforms we work in."
I like those sentimental stories. All the news next, then we'll be back. Morgan and Munch.